Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to your absolute favorite Saturday morning show, heard exclusively here, only on WEEB. This is Taking Aim. I am Steve Woodward, and I am pleased to report that we are joined this morning by a fabulous co-host, Robert Bortens, the CEO of Classical Conversations and the president of the Moore County Republican Men's Club. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're always welcome, and I know that you will lend great insights and commentary to today's proceedings here in the big state-of-the-art studio. We always begin our program each week. And by the way, thank you all for allowing me to take last week off, and I hope you enjoyed the replay of the wonderful interview that we had from a local treasurer. But we're back in the saddle now, and that's all that matters. We begin by acknowledging our beloved sponsor, the Marketplace Restaurant and Catering, since 1980. Were you even born then?
Not quite.
Well, see. Since 1980, your go-to for breakfast, lunch, and all of your catering needs, from intimate office gatherings to the wedding of the century. And if you go in for breakfast, be sure to try the new and delicious breakfast burritos at the Marketplace. And say hi to our friend Luke Black, proprietor. We now segue to the kickoff of each and every Saturday show, where we identify, after going through a very long list of candidates, public enemy number one. So many to choose from on any given week. There's always Senator Tom Tillis is on the short list. It's looking increasingly like the mayor of New York City will be a permanent candidate, Zoran the Moron Mamdani. Let's see, where else could I go with that? Oh, the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, is always a candidate. We had a whole roster of them who attended the Jesse Jackson funeral in Chicago recently. It was Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Kamala Harris. What a lineup of stooges that was. And they were so repulsive in using the funeral as a stage to criticize the Trump administration that even Jesse Jr. lashed out after the fact against them, really demonstrating that they didn't understand the legacy of his father by going political during his funeral, that his legacy was not choosing sides between Republicans and Democrats ever. And in fact, now video has come out showing that he had a very good relationship with then businessman Donald Trump in New York a long time ago, as did many people who now despise him. It's kind of a strange phenomenon. But public enemy number one this week, ladies and gentlemen, would be the Chicago White Sox. Now you're saying, how can a baseball team draw the wrath of this program? Well, a story came out this week that a former star pitching prospect from the Southern California area named Isaiah Carranza is suing the White Sox, who drafted him in 2018. And why? Well, 3 years after he had been drafted and was in their minor league system, Carranza and all of the players in the system were ordered to receive the experimental serum produced by Pfizer called the COVID vaccine, not a vaccine, actually an experimental use mRNA shot that had not been approved like a normal vaccine. Carranza initially declined. He's a healthy kid, 6'5", 95-mile-an-hour fastball. You know, what do I need a shot for? I'm in the prime of life. They told him that they would basically blacklist him in the organization and that his career would soon be over, so he complied, and he received the shot. Almost immediately, he began experiencing side effects, and later he was diagnosed with POTS, which is an acronym for a very difficult to pronounce ailment. But the bottom line is that it's a neurological disorder which causes the heart rate to elevate when standing up. Well, you know, pitchers generally deliver from the mound in a standing position, the last time I looked. So anyway, he has experienced all manner of basically a COVID jab injury to his otherwise healthy existence. And his career has, in fact, been derailed. And now he is suing the White Sox for lost wages, which are estimated to range between $3 and $19 million, as well as compensatory and punitive damages to cover the legal costs that he will now endure. All of this, of course, is tied to what we've learned about the jab, which is that for many younger, healthy people, it causes the spike protein, which is part of the virus, to remain in the body, in some cases indefinitely. And this is what happened to this young man. And I know a woman here in Moore County who's had this same problem. And is only now finding remedies for it. But, you know, not to mention the still-to-be-determined deaths that can be tied directly back to these jabs, again, in many younger, healthy, athletic people. And, Robert, you undoubtedly have some of your own anecdotal experiences with these kind of stories. Now, here we are on the sixth anniversary of the arrival of the pandemic. I well remember it was actually St. Patrick's Day when then Governor Roy Cooper ordered shelter in place for the entire state of North Carolina and waited until the middle of the afternoon to do it when the bars were about to have one of their biggest nights of the year, St. Patrick's Day. And they were all shut down in a heartbeat.
Yeah, so well, hats off to our sheriff who said that his rules were unconstitutional and we didn't enforce them here in Moore County as best we could. But yeah, my wife's grandfather, he was a cancer patient, perfectly fine, went to the hospital to get his normal cancer treatment. They tested him for COVID. He said, don't put me on a ventilator. He got tested for positive. They put him on the ventilator. Then they couldn't give him his cancer treatment, and he died within 2 weeks, his family never seeing him ever again. And, you know, of course, they said, well, he died of COVID. And he said, well, he didn't die of COVID. He died because you didn't give him his cancer treatment, because you couldn't give him his cancer treatment because it was against protocol. And so there are so many people. I know a person who was hit by a drunk driver. They died. They tested him for COVID. And so they put COVID on his death certificate as the reason that he died, even though he was died by a drunk driver. His family protested, and the hospital said, well, we get more money if he dies from COVID than from a drunk driver, so that's what we're going to put him down as.
And that's how they drove up the numbers to promote the fear-mongering.
Absolutely.
Case after case being written off on death certificates as COVID, when in fact it was, you know, morbid obesity, it was immunocompromised individuals. It was people with existing conditions. It was people who were denied treatment for other medical conditions.
Yep, absolutely. And the thing with the young people, especially like this baseball player, Europe was actually already doing research on it and found that the shots were not effective in young people. And so we had the research, and governors like Roy Cooper ignored it and instead put our young people at risk, more risk from a jab that wasn't going to protect them, but could actually hurt them, as we've seen now.
And then it got so insane that parents were being pressured to have their young kids, even as young as 6 months old, barely out of the womb, receive jabs. Because why? Teachers' unions were saying, we're not sending our teachers back to have these children carrying the deadly virus into the classrooms without vaccines. It was totally bogus. And probably one of the biggest scandals of my lifetime, that these teachers' unions basically shut down education, and that's a subject dear to your heart, out of this unwarranted fear that all their teachers were going to drop dead from the virus, the Wuhan virus, as I like to call it.
Yeah, I mean, the teachers' unions, in theory, right, unions are supposed to make sure their union members get paid well and are safe. Teachers' unions do the exact opposite. Teachers are underpaid, but the teachers' unions funnel their money back to the Democrat Party. And for safety, the number one reason why teachers quit is because of classroom issues. And in fact, we have a lot of classroom issues here in Moore County. We might get to that later.
We will.
But discipline. And so the teachers' unions are doing neither of the two things that unions are supposed to be doing for teachers, and that's why we need to get rid of them here in the state as well as around the country.
But I am happy to report, staying on this topic briefly for a little while, that in the 6 years that have passed since the arrival of the U.S.-sponsored lab leak virus, that Americans are increasingly in favor of protecting their health and medical freedom. This is manifest by a recent poll conducted in February by the Health Freedom Defense Fund and the Brownstone Institute. And what did it find? 1,000 registered voters. Out of that group, 93% definitely are very likely to vote. So in other words, an engaged group of registrants in the survey, not just random man on the street. Their strongest areas of agreement in the poll, 88% agree that they should have a right to refuse medical treatment generally, including 59% who strongly agree, and 87% agree that they should have the right to make one's own medical choices as a basic human right. And finally, one more data point, 88% agree, 64% strongly, that doctors should discuss vaccine concerns openly without fear of medical board backlash. And that's a real problem, too. I happen to know of a physician who was threatened by a patient that if everyone in the office wasn't wearing a mask, he was going to report them to, you know, the health board. So the patients were turning on their own physicians because they were buying into all the BS, from masking to social distancing to vaccinations and boosters and all the other stuff. I mean, people were wearing latex gloves in the grocery store. I'll never forget that. But
yeah, so it's absolutely ridiculous. And another personal anecdote is this was happening before COVID. My daughter was born with an illness, and Sand Hills Pediatrics, because we wanted to delay the vaccines, kicked us out. Do not send your kids to Sand Hills Pediatrics. They kicked us out because we wouldn't take their vaccine on their time schedule, and we wanted to do it on our own. And so we switched to Dr. Myra Hall. But yeah, even locally, you know, you think we'd have freedom here in Moore County to make decisions over our own bodies and the bodies of our children, right? So, we do not. And so I would just encourage everyone to make sure that, you know, if you're not going to have self-sovereignty over your body and be able to control what's going into it, that you find another medical practice. And
yeah, we learned a lot about our friends and neighbors during that dark period of time. We learned about who the woke pastors are in some of the churches, who lock their churches down like Fort Knox for fear of somebody catching a bad cold. et cetera, businesses. You know, some of these restaurants barely survived, and ultimately, a lot of local residents rose up and started ordering a lot of carry out and gift cards and things to keep them afloat, which turned out to be quite an effective strategy. So I'm just glad that's in the rearview mirror, and I pray and hope that we never have to endure that kind of tyrannical iron boot on our lives ever again. But we can't forget, because you know, they'll tee it up again if they think it'll work. And of course, mind you, that they quickly, you know, pivoted to seeing the virus as a way to affect the outcome of the presidential election. And once they had that in their sights, then there was no turning back, and we see how that worked out. Not well, but we got our revenge. As we always do, we segue to public embarrassment number one, another category which delivers us many candidates each and every week. Sometimes we need not look any further than our own county to find these people. But in this case, we go far afield to the state of Texas, the Lone Star State, where, like North Carolina, there was a recent primary election in which there was a primary for the U.S. Senate seat in Texas, which is currently held by longtime Senator John Cornyn, suspected of being a rhino, and certainly in the Tom Tillis Never Trump camp. I'm sure they spend a lot of time in the congressional hot tub together. But we go to Texas for the primary, and it's a showdown on the Democrat side for this Senate primary between Jasmine Crockett, the sort of poster child of the woke left in the halls of the U.S. House of Representatives. She represents a district around the Houston area. And, of course, she's, you know, become part of this AOC, Ilhan Omar, angry Democrat women crowd up on the Hill. So she's running with all this star power in this primary against a little-known Democrat named James Tallarico. Now, you would think that in a battle of mental midgets, that perhaps Jasmine would win going away. But wouldn't you know it, Tallarico, this sort of political lightweight, wins the primary over Jasmine rather significantly by a pretty wide margin. So now Tallarico is surging into the national scene, and he will have to face the outcome of the runoff on the Republican side between Cornyn and former, or maybe current, Attorney General of Texas Ken Paxson, who is a solid conservative choice. It remains to be seen how that race will work out. So Tallarico goes on one of these podcasts in the aftermath of his victory, you know, basking in the glow of his triumphant race for the seat, for the primary seat. And he's asked by this, he's asked a rather benign question about something, to tell us something about him that we may not know. And here's his answer. Play clip one.
Something that you love that's not family or friends.
I love, I'm just saying this because it's on my mind, the trans children who showed up yesterday at the state capitol to advocate for their humanity. They shouldn't have to, but it was an inspiration to watch.
Foldy.
I said last week that the Texas primary happened, that James Tallarico has an electability problem, not because he's a white dude and Jasmine Crockett doesn't have an electability problem because she's a black woman. They both have an electability problem in Texas because they are Democrats. And honestly, I think, you know, it seemed like prior to the vote happening there that Republicans were eager to run against Jasmine Crockett because she's so mentally unwell. But this guy is basically just as crazy as she is. And I do think that he's perceived by Democrats like Chuck Schumer, who regularly walks all over black Democratic candidates, as being more electable because he is white. But this guy is as unelectable in Texas. It doesn't matter if it's John Cornyn. It doesn't matter if it's Ken Paxson. He is as unelectable in Texas as you know, Barack Obama was. I mean, a Democrat is not going to win Texas. It doesn't matter what they do. I remember when I was in high school,
right,
when Democrats launched Battleground Texas or something like that in 2014. I said, this will be like their Vietnam. Every 2 years they try and make Texas happen. Still not going to happen.
What do you think?
You know, I wish I shared his optimism. I worry about Texas. I think it is vulnerable. Not from James Tallarico, but, you know, from his ilk. And they're never going to give up. That is their crown jewel. You know, that they, if they can turn Texas blue, then, you know, Katie bar the door, because then it's all over. But, you know, the public embarrassment crown usually has to be shared. And Robert brings us an excellent example related to the, what is it, Miss USA pageant?
Yeah, the Miss USA pageant in North Florida. We had a student, a classical conversation graduate, compete and win. And then they stripped her of her crown because she wouldn't sign a contract. So roll the clip.
They said, okay, Kaylee, you know, sign the contract or don't. And that'll result in you no longer being able to compete or be Miss North Florida. And so I declined to sign. I lost the opportunity to advance in the competition. I lost my Riley earned platform and all scholarship opportunities. Miss America kind of responded back and they said, well, she still has her crown. Yeah, I still have the physical souvenir, but I lost everything that it represented.
And just let's dig deeper into this. So what did they ask her to sign specifically?
So after she won, Miss America had a new contract, and part of the language of the contract said that Miss America would allow biological males to compete in their competition, and they had to sign off acknowledging that and not to speak out, basically, against it. And so she wanted to do it right and say that that's not Miss America. You know, that's trans, right? That is someone with a mental illness who's putting up on makeup to pretend to be a woman. And she would not go along with it. And so we need more brave young women like her standing up for women's rights instead of letting the woke Democrat mob step all over them.
I mean, the guy's name was Bert. He was I'm drawing a blank, for years hosted the pageant. And at the end, when the young lady was crowned, he would sing, "There she is, Miss America." So can you imagine a day coming when it's "There he is, Miss America"?
Unfortunately, yeah. I mean, how many times have different magazines crowned a man, you know, woman of the year, right? I think you see that all the time now. And so they're trying to celebrate this mental illness. These people need help. They need real help, not encouragement. And so if you really love someone, you're not going to encourage them in their mental health issues. You're going to encourage them to get real help so that they can identify with their physical body. And so it is really a rejection of biology. It's a rejection of DNA. It's a rejection of science. And if our culture continues to reject science, like the woke Democrat mob is doing, you know, it's going to end the republic.
Well, and you know, so this is unfortunate that this young lady was left with only her crown and very little else going forward. But I would encourage her to look to the example of Riley Gaines, who was a collegiate swimmer, defeated by a biological male in her event, denied the national championship in that event. She was scheduled to become a dental school student. That was her next thing that she was going to do. Since that time, she has evolved into this national figure. She has a podcast. She's a guest on all kinds of radio shows and Fox News and everywhere else. She has become sort of a minor celebrity, not because she's seeking attention to herself, but because she's become the face of these women who have been stripped of their rightful crowns in athletic competition by men competing in their events. In her case, swimming. We've seen it in volleyball. We've seen it in track and field. We've seen it in a number of other sports. And so I hope that Kaylee is her name?
Yeah, Kaylee. Yeah, so you can go to the Refining Rhetoric podcast and listen to the whole thing. And she actually went viral 2 years later on TMZ because she went to D.C. and got recognized by a group for her efforts to protect women in women's spaces. And they saw her wearing a sash from the group that recognized her and went to interview her. And that went viral. And that's how we got a hold of her. And so the Lord works in mysterious ways. And yes. I know that she's working on growing her platform so she can protect more girls and they don't have to have their dignity stripped from them like she had hers.
And let's dot our I's and T's. Refining Rhetoric is available wherever your podcasts may be found.
Exactly.
And is this a weekly program?
Yeah, it's a weekly program. Every single Wednesday, new episodes get launched.
And it's good. I've watched it. It's excellent. High production value, compelling guests, and of course, a velvety voiced host in Robert Borton's. So.
Well, thank you.
And maybe someday you'll be singing, "There She Is."
No, I like. No one wants me to sing.
Me neither, but I do it anyway. Yeah, you know, what can I tell you? So that wraps up the public embarrassment section. Although, I had to make note of a runner-up because this one worries me a little bit. The Bank of England is in the process of removing all the historical figures' images from their currency, from their banknotes, including Winston Churchill. And the author Jane Austen and numerous other people of historical significance in the history of the kingdom. And they're going to replace them with images of animals, like Churchill replaced by a squirrel or what have you. Now, why is this relevant? Well, it concerns me because I can just see a movement gaining traction in the United States to remove all these terrible white supremacists from our currency. Washington, Lincoln, Benjamin.
Yeah. Franklin, yeah. Franklin. No, I mean, it's a complete...
Because you and I like to peel the Benjamins. You know, so.
Like to have a couple more. Yeah, I mean, the United Kingdom and England are committing cultural suicide as we speak. And unfortunately... they're only going faster, as fast as they can to destroy their own heritage. And so, unfortunately, like the UK doesn't even have working boats. They used to have the best navy in the entire world. They don't have one boat they can send to Iran right now to help out the Allies. So it's a complete joke. When you go woke, not only do you go broke, but you lose your own country. And we see that firsthand, what Democrat policies would do here in the United States, because they're doing the same thing in the UK.
The Royal Navy reduced to rubber rafts. Who would have thunk it?
Terrible. Sad times.
Yes, it is. Very sad. Well, you know, and a similar example to that, which I'll throw in, is in the state of Arizona, as in many states, North Carolina included, you can go to your DMV and select from any number of vanity plates that you want on your car, you know, celebrating wildlife, celebrating LGBTQ, celebrating, I don't know, Save the Whale, on and on and on. In Arizona, there are more than 100 of those type of vanity plates you can choose from. But when the state legislature, dominated by Republicans, passed a law or passed a resolution to acknowledge the introduction of a new plate honoring Turning Point USA and the late Charlie Kirk, assassinated last September, the woke lefty governor of Flippin, Arizona, Katie Hobbs, vetoed it. No Charlie Kirk vanity plate. And by the way, a portion of the proceeds that you pay for the vanity plate, you pay like a fee of $30 or $40 for the plate, was going to go to TPUSA, which, of course, is the largest organization of its kind on college and high school campuses, opening the eyes of young students to basic constitutional literacy, the importance of love of country, the importance of faith, as faith and freedom as two inseparable components of their lives. And this idiot governor in Arizona makes, heck, she makes Josh Stein look nearly bearable as our current governor, little Josh. But just another example of, you know, they'll do anything symbolically to distort the culture, to either protect, you know, what they perceive to be the woke, values that they want to sustain, or to erase history. And we saw it in our country with the removal of all these Civil War era statues. Now they're doing it in England with the currency. And, you know, Churchill's not exactly a handsome looking man, but he shouldn't be removed from the banknote.
Well, your country wouldn't exist without Churchill.
Exactly right. I bet you they don't learn that in Moore County schools.
They probably don't learn that in the UK schools anymore either.
You make a good point. That's true. Let's see. We talked about... this is kind of funny. I'll throw this one in too, because we have some time. Do you ever watch an NBA game?
The Hornets are doing halfway good this year, so I've caught a few minutes of their games, but that's probably the first time I've watched any NBA game in a decade.
I can't think of a more irrelevant professional league, really. I mean, and that's just my own bias, because I don't dislike basketball. I like to watch college basketball. There's obviously the tournaments are going on now. The ACC tournament is underway. So it's that time of year for the March Madness. But so down in Atlanta, you'll like this one. The Atlanta Hawks are an NBA team. They've been around for decades, a well-established team. They have been conducting a series of promotions around their home games involving acknowledging local cultural icons in and around greater Atlanta. You know, things like famous museums or libraries or organizations of significance. Well, they had scheduled coming up here pretty soon a night to pay tribute to a local icon institution that happens to be a strip club. Now let that sink in. Now, the strip club apparently is known for more than just legs. It's also known for wings. Apparently it serves up a rather delicious buffalo-style wing for its patrons. And so they were going to, at the Atlanta Hawks home game, they were going to serve the wings and pay tribute to the strip club. I forgot to write down the name of it. It doesn't matter. Obviously, it doesn't matter. But some NBA player in San Antonio, of all places, caught wind of this and reported it to the NBA league offices in New York City, the city that never sleeps. And the NBA took a look at it and said, you know, this isn't exactly as benign as, like, say, Bad Bunny at the Super Bowl. This is a NBA team celebrating a strip club, and there's probably going to be kids at the game, and they're going to be, Daddy, what's a strip club? And, you know, they decided to tell the Hawks to cancel the event. And I think the NBA, for once, choosing to do the right thing.
Yeah, it might be the first time in a decade they've chosen to do the right thing. And yeah, where'd common sense go? Like, you hope that athletic events are things that bring people together and are family friendly. And if you're going to do something as absurd as having a strip club night, that is neither family-friendly nor bringing people together. And, of course, we know how dangerous that is to young women, again, from, like, sexual trafficking and, so many other things that are involved with that. And so, it's a tip of the hat, I guess, to the NBA and whoever was in charge of that at the Atlanta Hawks. Hopefully he's been fired for just being incompetent at their role.
Yeah, the funny thing is, depending on who the owner is, people like that often don't get fired. They end up, you know, promoted somehow or another. It's kind of a bizarre cultural problem that we have in this. It's a very broken culture, so we shouldn't be terribly surprised by that. We are, of course, in the midst of a military engagement in Iran. It seems to be going quite well for the U.S. forces and our strategists. And I think to date we can objectively say that it has been an overwhelming show of force and perhaps a long overdue engagement as well. I hesitate to call it a war because it seems like quite a mismatch. But one of the components of this latest chapter in U.S. military history that has been discussed in recent weeks is the role of artificial intelligence in the planning of a military intervention. And to the extent that, as with all things AI, what are the pitfalls? What are the upsides? Should we be concerned about it, or should we just sort of accept the blinding pace at which AI is seeping into every element of humanity in this world? I follow a young author and speaker named Joe Allen. He appears frequently on Steve Bannon's War Room streaming program, which I highly recommend. Joe has written at least one book on the coming dominance of artificial intelligence and what it could mean for the future of humanity and civilization. He recently was making some remarks amid this Iran engagement, and was asked to describe sort of how AI comes into play during what we call the fog of war. Can we play the Joe Allen clip, please?
Military tasks, attacks that would have been planned over the course of hours or weeks are being planned and executed in seconds. That may be a bit of an exaggeration, but the most important facet of the AI integration into the military, especially in this war, is the decision compression. So when any commander is looking for what is a valid target, how to prioritize the targets that have been identified as valid, they're going to be using systems like Claude, pairing them with Palantir, raking over surveillance data, and then using the decisions made by the AIs to then make top-level human decisions. What is really important to remember about that, Steve, is that, yes, to the extent we always have humans in the loop, and that is the Department of War policy and has been and hopefully will continue to be, the decision to kill or not to kill begins, in many cases, with the AI making the decision and a human checking it. And if the decision compression is, in fact, down to seconds, it's very difficult for me to imagine how it is that a human is going to be able to accurately assess what the AI has presented to him.
Wow, that'll take your breath away.
Yeah, it's very scary. I mean, I think about the prequels and the Star Wars and the robot armies, and thinking about how dangerous that can be to humanity, especially when they're making the decisions to kill or not kill. And look, I use AI almost every single day, trying to help me make better decisions, faster decisions, process data. And so there's definitely acceptable uses of it. Humans have to be in the loop, but you have to have wise humans in the loop. Like, not just someone with a functional brain. And how do you become wise? Well, you have to have a lot of experience. And so if you are taking away that opportunity of experience to be able to properly identify, what is an actual threat and what is not an actual threat, well, you're going to have more mistakes being made. So maybe our current military, who's had a lot of experience doing that, might be fine using AI and making some decisions that way. 5 years from now, 10 years from now, our military will not have the same wisdom, will not be equipped with the same experiences, because they will have not gone through the same level of training, because they will have relied on AI way too much. And so it is a very scary potential future for us, especially for like an enemy like China, who might just doesn't care about having civilians versus a military target, or terrorist who might use a $300 drone, put a weapon on it, and fly it in somewhere. And so AI is extremely powerful. It's going, it's doubling every 6 months, every 3 months right now. So you can think about a year from now, it could be 4 to 8 times more powerful than it is today. And so it is an extremely dangerous weapon, and we need very wise people figuring this out.
Yeah. We need very wise people in a lot of places, and I think there's a wisdom deficit in our country. Well, I'll just say this about that. If you ever find me floating face down in the lake at Reservoir Park, it will be the day that I allowed Microsoft Word Copilot to start helping me write a sentence. Because that ain't going to happen. If it does, I will have to just hurl myself into the nearest body of water, because I just don't want that day to ever come. It's maddening. Everywhere you turn, they want to help you write something. No, I can do it myself. I've been doing it for a while. One of the few things I know how to do.
It's definitely going to accelerate the dumbing down of our society, yeah, which will make us susceptible to tyranny and to collectivism. And one of the things that we need to be doing is keeping AI as far away from our children as possible for as long as possible, because not just using it and just the science behind how it's destructive to your brain and your brain waves, but also the ideas of like AI as a companion. And so young children are becoming friends with AI. And, you know, we've had some that have committed suicide because of advice that AI gives them. And so it's a very clear and present danger. I feel like there's a lot of sober conversations going on, but you also have a lot of transhumanists, like the guy who runs OpenAI, and people like Bill Gates who don't really care too much for humanity and want to see the population decline. You know, that's pretty scary to have those type of people in charge of programming these things. So,
well, you've set the table very well for a conversation I want to have now that we've discussed the wisdom and intelligence deficit, to segue us into the recent primaries here in Moore County, specifically pertaining to the races for two at-large seats on the Board of Education. Some of us just call it the school board. It was a very crowded field, I think we can say that. Because it was a designated nonpartisan race, which it certainly is not nonpartisan, let me be very clear about that, but because it's designated as such by the Board of Elections, the local Moore County GOP was free to endorse. And because of the math, they felt compelled to endorse four candidates. And those were Jim Peterson, David Norris, Olivia Oxendine, and Don Zalaki, known affectionately as Coach Z. So what happens? Coach Z prevails with the most votes. And then I think coming second was Peterson.
Yes.
And then Olivia Oxendine.
I think she was fourth. And then there was a Democrat who apparently has been in jail before. I don't know the specific details.
Yes. He does have a bit of a rap sheet, I think. But yes, that's the Democrat, to my knowledge, a novice candidate for school board, first time running. Probably won't be a factor, but we can never know anymore. In this county as the demographic shift. But David Norris, among the endorsed someone that we all, those of us close to the Republican Party in this county know, he's a very sincere, fine gentleman and gifted with quite a soaring intellect. He's an IT guy. He has been part of the Carthage Planning and Zoning Board, I think, where he lives in Carthage. And he ran for school board with some excellent messaging, some really well-produced social media and radio advertising. And yet he managed to finish fairly far down the list there. And I'm still trying to figure that out. But meanwhile, so we're left with three of the four endorsed running this fall. And this is the one of the major problems with having such an early primary, is that basically everything kind of stops now. The signs go away and all the candidates are sort of left to recalibrate. And nobody's going to pay any attention to them until after Labor Day. So here we are. What What are you thinking as you see these races unfold going forward, Robert, given your affinity for public education reform and the plight of today's kids in our classrooms?
Yeah, well, I think all three of these candidates, Jim, Olivia, and Don, could be a benefit for us. So, yeah, I think, you know, Jim, he's a Marine Corps veteran and father of four graduates, and he wants to restore discipline, transparency, and accountability. Just so people know, they might not know that right now our schools locally have a discipline problem. There were over 1,600 cases of in-school suspensions, which increased from the previous year of 708. Bus suspensions jumped to 189 from 107. The private police referred 53 students to the Second Chance program, up from 28, and 15 teens to court, up from 11, and 40 to juvenile justice, up from 21. And of course, we don't have SROs in all of our public schools, and that's something that Coach Z really hung his hat on. And he's teaching at the Sand Hills Classical Christian School. Obviously, he's been in the public school system for a really long time.
In Indiana.
And that's one of the things that he ran on, was making sure that we have armed SROs in every single school to keep our kids safe, as well as reading literacy. I mean, if you don't know how to read, then the world's going to be closed off to you. And the statistics show, not for Moore County is a little bit better than this, but public schools in general, only 34% of students can read at grade level. And in our country, less than half of American adults can read at the sixth grade level. And so that's a declining country when you have those type of statistics. Olivia, I don't know as much about her. She's been in education for 40 years, but I believe she was on the state school board of education.
State board of education for well over a decade.
And I'm not, again, Olivia might be a great person, and she's only one of many, so I don't know what her positions were on there. But I will just say that the state board of education has been going backwards in their policy for a very, very long time. So I'm not putting that on Olivia herself. She might have been against everything that they did. I just I would want to know that from her.
Yeah, I don't think that, you know, in general, when it comes to school board candidates, I would prefer to see people who have varied backgrounds, who are not products of the public education
establishment,
the industrial complex. A lot of times there's this presumption that, well, you have to have been an educator to be qualified to be on a school board. Wrong. That's the exact opposite of what we want on the school board. We really need fiscal stewards. We need critical thinkers. We need people who have managed and or owned businesses, and who ask questions, who are curious about fiscal matters. I mean, let's look at David Norris. He, several months ago, realized that the Moore County Board of Education had essentially decided, without any public input, where they were going to build the new Carthage Elementary School. They went so far as to stroke the check to buy the land. He sued them for failure to operate with appropriate transparency in the expenditure of taxpayer dollars. I was all for that. He later discussed with members of the board his concerns, and they came to a sort of an informal agreement to sort of cool the temperature, and he withdrew the lawsuit. Well, a lot of people use that as a negative against him in the campaign. Why would you want to sue the organization that you intend to become a member of? Well, I'll give you a couple of reasons. Because you're running to reform it, not to become a part of it, not to become a part of the problem. This is why people complain about David Hensley on the school board, who's in his second term, because he goes in there with his eyes wide open and with a feeling that it is his duty to ask difficult questions about hiring, about expenditures, about budgeting for legal fees, budgeting for architects for new schools, all these things that the general guy walking around that makes their eyes glass over, but somebody's got to do it, or else our taxpayer dollars will be frittered away by these educators who think they know best and that we should just step aside and let them write the checks and spend the money. And it's that's not the way it should be. David Norris would have brought a fresh set of eyes and ears into the mix. And yet, you know, I don't know if there were whisper campaigns or what was going on. Meanwhile, Coach Z, who was not triumphant in his first attempt to run for the school board, this time rolls to victory with the most votes on primary election day and of course, early voting. And so we'll have to see how he adapts his campaign messaging for the general election. You know, I think let's just address the elephant in the room. Jim Peterson is the conservative voice, the last man standing, who has been a vocal critic of the school board in recent years, especially when it comes to inappropriate books in the school libraries, going so far as to read aloud from them to demonstrate his point as to why they are inappropriate for elementary school age students. And that has earned him a reputation as some kind of a loose cannon. Well, in my opinion, he is a patriot. He is he has served his country. He has come to the aid of veterans in recent years. And now he has taken up the public education industrial complex and seeks, you know, these people who file to run for these seats, you know, we should not underestimate what they're doing in terms of making themselves very vulnerable to all kinds of criticism. And there's some really evil people out there in this county abusing social media, using false identities to set up accounts to target people that they don't like. And apparently a lot of people on the left don't like Jim Peterson. I'm glad that he made it through the primary, because we need reform agents like him running for school board. And he's unapologetic, and that's what you want. Right now, as the school board is constituted, were it not for David Hensley and Pauline Bruno, everybody would look like a lineup of clapping seals and bobblehead dolls. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's also, you need to point out that the school board has spent money, as you said, without consulting where the school needs to go in Carthage, and so that's a big issue. And then they've spent, I believe, over $600,000 on legal fees, and projected to be maybe as high as $2 million, but that number's just a projection. And that is about 3 to 4 times the state average of legal fees, especially considering the size of our county. Mm-hmm. And so the current school board is just as bad at wasting money under the current leadership as the teachers unions do. So it's really important that we get two of these three, Jim, Don, and Olivia, across the border. Otherwise, we're going to continue to see our public servants waste our public dollars in the school board. And so I'm glad that some of these things have been pushed back to 2028, so that we can get a better school board in. But this is going to be huge if we can get two of these three across. And I hope David runs again, because I mean, Coach Z did lose last time, but hopefully he learned some lessons and he was able to apply those this time, and that's maybe why he got first place overall. David probably learned some lessons this time. I do feel like there may have been some discrimination based on his medical history that have nothing to do with his competence, nothing to do with his ability to serve. And
which is infuriating if that is in fact the case.
And so, I really encourage David to run again, because he would be a great school board member.
I agree with you completely. Well, Robert, we have reached the end of our program. Another compelling morning here on WEEB. I thank you very much for joining us. Make sure that you find Refining Rhetoric podcasts each and every week, and you will be enlightened on all matters related to making this a greater country and our education system more effective for our kids. I am Steve Woodward, and we'll be back next week with another lineup of compelling content and sound bites and discussions right here, doing what we always do best, taking aim.